right, good morning, everyone. Would you stand with me and we'll have our Pledge of Allegiance and invocation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will you bow with me, please? Dear Heavenly Father, we come today to conduct county business and we ask your blessings upon this meeting and the decisions that are made here. Thank you for our attendance here. We just thank you for this time of the year, Lord. We just pray for some rain, though, that would really help us out, help us to make the wise decisions today regarding that particular issue. We're thankful for our visitors that are here and ask for your blessing upon them as they return home. We ask it all in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen.
All right, item number one, public comments or requests for information on non-agenda items. I do believe I have one. Anybody else that I don't know about? Would you like to speak now or you want to wait till that particular item? Or you want to speak both times? Yeah. Just making sure. Anybody else? All right, item number two, consider and possibly approve minutes from our June 8th two public hearings that we had at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. and then our regular meeting on June 13th.
I've reviewed those minutes. They've been corrected. I move they be approved.
Thank you. Got a motion by Commissioner Boggs, second by Commissioner Hinton, that we accept minutes from those three particular meetings. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, and it's unanimous. Item number three, a presentation from Judge K. McNutt regarding clerk certification. Judge, you're up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing? Are you okay, I would like
don't hide behind that.
Okay, this is on behalf of the Court Personnel Education Committee, the Court Personnel Certification Committee, and the Texas Justice Court Training Center. Thank you for your hard work and dedication to your profession. On May 27, 2011, Irma Ayala passed the Justice of the Peace Court Personnel 11-1 certification exam. So she is certified as a criminal clerk, and we want to congratulate her.
Thank you. Got my staff photographer. Congratulations, Irma.
As one more note, I want to tell the court and the judge that I've been asked to serve on the Texas Justice Court Training Center Education Committee, and I've accepted that.
Great.
I appreciate
congratulations to you,
thank
too.
Great honor. Congratulations.
Thank you, ladies. All right, item number four, consider and possibly approve policy and procedures for Homeland Security NIMS training and NIMS CAST reporting. Chief McCray is here with us to address this. Chief?
In the last 2 or 3 weeks, we were audited by the Homeland Security Office. Like I said, the county receives Homeland Security funding, and part of that is the training that goes along with it, required for that. And it's on the National Incident Management System, which is NIMS. What they said was we should have a policy in place in the county, since the county receives the money, and we actually divide the money up after that thing. But it's a policy and training procedure for the training that individuals need to have. There's different levels of NIMS training, and the county needs to have a policy on how that training is going to be conducted, tracked, and taken care of. One of the things we had to do annually is submit a report saying here's who's supposed to have gotten training, who has got the training, and that's part of the requirement to get the Homeland Security funding. So that's what this policy basically is all about. It just outlines the training that's required for NIMS, how to track it, and how we should put it into the NIMS CAST database that's going to show that. Part of it puts responsibility back on the department heads to verify and attest that the training has been done. Where in the past, when I've had to put it into the database, I've had some documentation from different responsibility on the department heads to attest, assigning a survey that they have to fill out each year to put the information into the NIMS cabinet. So if we want to continue to be able to get our Homeland Security funding, we're going to need to put this in place.
So that's the primary difference, is individual responsibility as far as attesting to actually having taken that rather than just word of mouth with you. Will they report that still directly to you, or will they report that directly elsewhere?
Yes. Once a year, they'll fill out a survey, give it back to me, show them what the training is, and I'll load that into the database. It also requires, allows the departments to decide. There's different levels of training, and so if you're an entry level, you're a, say, firefighter level, here's the training you need. If you're a lieutenant or a captain, here's the training you need, or a chief or what have you. It allows the departments to establish the required training for different positions within their departments, too. And then they'll submit that to me, and we'll submit it to the state, eventually the feds.
And that training goes beyond just training of firemen. That extends on to other departments as well.
It's anybody that has received equipment that has been purchased for Homeland Security funding, which is fire, police, EMS, public works, commissioner's court, road crews. Pretty much everybody in our county has received communications equipment that's been purchased with, and will still receive communications equipment that's going to be purchased for Homeland Security funding. So.
Okay. All right.
It's kind of in a nutshell.
And that policy and procedure has already been prepared, as I understand it.
Yeah. I've got a copy on the tablet. Pass around if you like.
Good to make that motion to approve the policy and procedure on Homeland Security training.
Motion by Commissioner Boggs.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Hinton. All those in favor of approval of these policies and procedures for our Homeland Security training, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye, and it's unanimous. All right, next subject. Talking about a burn ban, and I'm glad the chief is here so that we can hear from him. And I know that I would certainly like your guidance on what and when to do.
Well, this is kind of the situation we're in right now. We've had 31 brush fires this month, but only three of those. Only three of those have been associated with outdoor burning. Two of those were actually, there was a problem. Got there, somebody just thought there was. We had one that did cause a small grass fire. The main causes we've been having is somebody throwing stuff out along the road. We've had some along the railroads. A lot of them have been electrical power lines popping together, or a tree falling over a power line. We've had some started from haying operations. But outdoor burning is really not causing. We get a lot of calls from people wanting to know if there's a burn ban on, and what we tell them is, no, there's not a burn ban on right now, but we really don't recommend that you do any outdoor burning. So the people that are, if they are doing outdoor burning, are being real careful about it. We're not having a lot of fires that are being called in outdoor burning. We have had the fire we had Sunday before last that burned about 11 acres up north. Is actually from a bird that got into the power line and sparked it and caused that fire. Right now, for about a 4 or 5 day period, we had a lot of wind. And a wind driven fire is a lot more difficult to deal with than just a fuel driven fire. But so the fires that we have had, they're not been real difficult to put out. Even that one that day, when we got the resources out there that we needed, it wasn't that hard to control. So putting a burn ban on at this point in time is not going to, there's nothing out there that's really causing us problems in that burn ban.
Yeah. Any questions for the chief?
Yeah, I don't want to have any. Four or five phone calls, people asking us to put the burn ban on. I'm in favor of doing it for a period of time myself.
Yeah, I've had the same thing. Several people called me and asked me the same thing. They're concerned about it.
And well, I understand
You know, unfortunately, we're at a time of the year when a lot of folks make their living off of July 4th, and I hope you'll factor that into your decisions. I'd like to hear from Judge Russell. He's requested an opportunity to address this. But before I do that, any other questions for the chief?
And I would like to, even if you put a burn ban on, that doesn't stop the sale of fireworks.
No, we're past that.
What is the index? What kind of indication do we have there?
Right now, the KBDI, which is one of the drought indexes, is about 540 something. The highest is 800. When it gets into the 7 to 8, that's when it really drives.
You must have been in a different place than I've been. It's very dry.
I'm just going what the website says.
What were you telling me about the dew?
The fuels out here that we're dealing with are considered 1 hour fuels. What that means is the grasses and stuff are 1 hour fuels. You know, in the mornings when the dew is out or we get a little bit of rain, those grasses won't burn. But when it talks about a 1 hour fuel, that means it takes about 1 hour's time for the fuel to have moisture in it and for the moisture to go away. So in the mornings it might not be so bad. They get out and do some burning, but in the afternoons when the sun comes out and the wind blows, the grass is dried out. A lot more volatile. One thing to consider too, if we put a burn ban on, that should include all outdoor burning, which means that if there's any more right of way clearing that needs to be done, that needs to be halted as well.
Is there any impact whatsoever on limiting people's use of their fireworks? Do you recommend they not use a certain type, or can you control that even at this point?
There's really nothing we can control other than you can submit to the governor's office a request to set up an emergency declaration that could stop the sale of all fireworks out of the county. But it has to be through the governor's office.
But we've already missed that time frame, have we not?
The time frame we missed was June 15th for the ban of aerial fireworks, which the county could have done. But in order to stop the sale of all fireworks, there's not a timeline for that. It would just be the commission would have to submit that to the governor for the approval. I think Camp and Franklin are the only ones up in this area that have done that.
Are you saying that if we implement a burn ban today, it would not affect the sale of fireworks or fireworks exhibition for the July?
How can we encourage people who have that freedom to be smart with what they're doing? Because we all know that's a prime candidate for starting fires.
And that's what we do. Every time we have contact with the public, we've had it in the paper, and we probably will ask them to run another article this week, just reminding people to be super cautious when you're going to use fireworks. The aerial devices are really the ones that can get away from you. Pulling firecrackers out there on the pavement, watching them pop, is not a real concern. But the aerial fireworks that go up and might land in somebody's hay meadow or something, that could be a problem. Public education is all we can do.
As a businessman, I'm kind of concerned about the economic impact of limiting what these people have two times a year they sell a product, and it's an economic impact on them. And also, Trinity spends a lot of money every year on wonderful community service, and that's their celebration of the 4th of July. I have no problem implementing a burn ban, but I don't want to impede their ability to have their exhibition and these people's ability to sell their product one or two times a year that they sell their product.
Actually, if y'all put a burn ban, Trinity's inside the city limits, so unless the city puts a burn ban on, which y'all do, it won't have any impact, anything inside.
several calls wanting Parkland, and many of them thought that that included fireworks, but it doesn't matter to me now. I mean, I would just soon put one on if it doesn't hinder the commerce that's going to be done over next weekend.
I'm not real sure we got time to get fireworks banned on anyway every now and then.
Yeah. They, even people that are clearing don't want to burn.
I'm putting the burn ban on.
You're okay with fireworks sales?
Well, I don't know that we got time to do anything about it anyway.
No problem with that. Said common sense and just, you know.
I'd a whole lot rather be safe and put one on now than to have a 2,000-acre fire like we had one year with that burn barrel that caught the country on fire in my precinct.
We need to make that motion.
Thank you, Chief. Well, would you like to address this? Sure. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Judge Lee, Commissioners, you know, the worst thing you can do is offer a microphone to a lawyer. You realize that.
I got a switch up here.
I understand. I've operated it before. Thank you for the record. My name is Sam Russell. I'm here today on behalf of Zach Stearns, who operates the TNT Fireworks Warehouse on South 271 and numerous other locations around the state. I appreciate the fact that y'all are taking into consideration the fact of the fireworks and how it plays into a countywide burn ban. I'm pretty sure the Texas Association of Counties, since back in April, has been funneling information to county judges and commissioners about the process involved for banning the sale and use of fireworks. You know, the culprits in the fireworks are the rockets and the missiles. And the statute, the local government code, is clear on the fact that if you're going to ban rockets and missiles, you need to enter an order for the July 4th period by June 15th. So we're past that deadline to enter an order to ban the sale of rockets and missiles. Zach Stearns, I believe, told me Friday that for his businesses, he has pretty much self-imposed a moratorium on rockets and missiles and is not planning to sell those types of fireworks. So, but that doesn't eliminate the mom-and-pop operators that are out here spotted around different places in the county. I'm sure they have bought their inventories and prepared for this 10-day window of sale. And in all likelihood, many of those individuals need that extra money during the year at those two times to help make ends meet. So I did note copied off a copy of an order off of the county web, Texas Association of County websites that regulated or prohibited certain fireworks, and it specifies rockets and missiles, and then goes on to say that it does not prohibit common fireworks, small in size, classified as Class C explosives, and large fireworks designed primarily to produce visible or audible effects by combustion or detonation and classified as Class B explosives. So, Mr. Stearns would appreciate, and I'm sure all of the other operators, although I'm not here on their behalf, and all of us kids who are 6 years of age or older, literally and figuratively, would appreciate the fact that if you do implement a countywide burn ban, that you do not include fireworks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen. what's your pleasure?
Judge, I would like a motion we implement the fire ban of Pinellas County, accepting the firearms.
Got a motion by Commissioner Hockaday that we do implement immediately a countywide burn ban, but this will not have an impact on firework sales or firework shows. Is that what I understand?
Right.
All right.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Hinton. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And it's unanimous. Thank you. Appreciate you all's input. Yes, thank you. All right. Item number six. I've got a contingency of four folks that I've gotten to be friends with over the last few weeks, and they were nice enough to all come to town and make a brief presentation for us regarding the TEX 21 Interstate 30 Corridor Task Force. I'm not sure you have ever had a presentation regarding this, but it's very clear to me that we are in strong competition with Interstate 20 to promote I-30, and the fact that we're right here in the middle of it promoting the I-30 corridor is absolutely in our best interest. I will let you hear some more from this presentation. They can do a much better job than I can do. I had the opportunity to go to Little Rock, Arkansas a few weeks ago and spend a day listening to this, learning some more about TEX 21 and all the different things that, will be impacted if we can successfully draw folks to I-30 to be the predominant route, from the south to the north. We stand to gain many things from it in the short term as well as the long term. Effective participation in this would require a nominal monetary contribution on our part, and I want you to hear about that and be able to make an educated decision there. So without further delay, who's going to make the presentation? Bob? Mr. Bob Murray.
I do appreciate the opportunity to be here to meet with you. I'm pretty passionate about all things economic development and transportation. One of my equations as an engineer is transportation equal economic development. Okay? And the lack of it equals the lack of economic development. I'm delighted to be here today. Let me get this over here on my side. Neil. I'm actually standing in for Blue County Commissioner John Addington, who, as you might suspect, is in his own commissioner's court this morning, so I'm sure you understand that. Delighted to be here with my friends from TEX 21, Dean International, and as I'm sure you'll understand, I'm not going to say anything any different than John would if he were standing here in my place. In my role back in the Texarkana, Bowie County area, I serve as an engineer frequently for the county, involved in economic development and our Economic Development Council there locally. And we just are very, very interested in seeing the I-30 corridor not only stay the transportation corridor it is today, but to grow and to continue to bring prosperity to our areas. During our during the second annual Transportation Infrastructure Summit that was held in Irving, Texas, elected officials and transportation authorities united together to form a grassroots coalition with the purpose of developing a cohesive vision for the future of transportation. Transportation excellence for the 21st century, and we had to do a little explaining about that, didn't we, David, while we were in Arkansas. A lot of people think that stands for Texas, but it's actually transportation excellence for the 21st century. And it has grown to include numerous member cities, counties, transit board authorities, international trade corridors, universities, and other industry leaders. It encompasses about 60% of Texas's 25 million plus population and has new members in Arkansas, a growing portion of that state as well. TEX 21 has grown to include numerous member cities ranging from far to Dallas, El Paso, to Little Rock. Our member counties include Bowie, Wise, and Rockwall, to name a few. And in addition, the private sector recognizes the importance of our mission, vision, and goals. Numerous transit organizations and transportation authorities, international trade corridors, universities, and other industry leaders have joined arms with Text 21 to work toward improving the entire South Central transportation and infrastructure situation. So you can see and understand the value of an organization like Text 21. I believe it's important that we, as elected officials, people like myself that are passionate about economic development, understand the origins of Text 21 and the corridor task force that we're also pitching here today. In keeping with the original purpose of Text 21 as a whole, we find ourselves here in Titus County doing just that. It's important to note that our members recognize, I think this is key, the importance of cities and counties all along this corridor coming together, seeking the benefits of a common goal through a collective, concentrated effort for this I-30 corridor. And the continuing importance of this vital transportation and commerce corridor as a conduit for economic development, and that's exactly what it is. Back in October 2010, the leadership of Text 21 recognized the need for reinvestment along the I-30 corridor. Due to this, Text 21 engaged stakeholders along the corridor and found the need for a unified approach with regard to transportation, infrastructure, and economic development. And those three things certainly go together. Instead of competing with one another, which we often find ourselves doing, when we're going after pass-through toll financing and things like that, but for this, instead of competing for local transportation funding, the theme for this unified approach is cooperative effort, where neighboring cities and counties sharing the same goal, which is ultimately the most effective way to do it. Pursuing both funding and economic success together is clearly the best way to formulate and sustain effective transportation policies. Back in Bowie County, we call this the view from 30,000 feet. I actually borrowed that from Northwest Arkansas, but I like it because it says it kind of the way I like to say it. How does it work? A simple example of this Text 21 view from 30,000 feet is to understand with all confidence that when good things happen, say on a transportation and economic development project in Rowlett, Texas, because of the conduit that is I-30, that's good for Texarkana, Arkansas. And when something in Little Rock goes very positively, adding additional capacity, doing whatever may help with the I-30 corridor, that's a victory for Franklin County, Texas. It just expands our view of the regional thing that is transportation. Communities along the I-30 corridor are all tied together, and the continued effort to unify our common goal will only strengthen our likelihood for success. Under the leadership of Bowie County Commissioner John Addington, Text 21 Chairman, and also Irving Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Rick Stoffer, the Text 21 I-30 Corridor Task Force was created. With the full support of Congressman Ralph Hall, building on the momentum created, we have held several planning meetings, including two meetings in both Greenville, Texas, and Little Rock, the minutes of which you have on one of these this past January. Most recently, we met in Little Rock on the 7th of June, and Judge Liam has already mentioned that meeting. Arkansas State Transportation and Highway Director Dan Flowers has also recognized the value of such a task force and has agreed to meet with Text 21 on a quarterly basis. With his retirement, which he actually announced while we were up there, Text 21 will seek the same type of cooperation in meetings with Scott Bennett, the new director. In addition, several members of the Arkansas Assembly have joined Text 21's legislative caucus at this point. Included in this list are Arkansas Senators Harrelson and Teague, Arkansas Representatives Cozart, Malk, Hall, Hyde, McCrary, Roebuck, and Stewart. You find a list of over 120 federal elected officials who are on board with Text 21 in your packet that you receive. And it also includes more information than just these few slides that I'm showing. The result of improving I-30 serves as an example of what Text 21 refers to as the commerce of transportation. The states of Texas, Arkansas, as well as the entire South Central region. When we speak of commerce, and I think the eye on the slides aren't forgetting. When we speak of commerce and transportation, we're referring to the reality that transportation improvement spurs economic development, which in turn produces prosperity and improves the quality of life for everyone. Oftentimes, when we're talking about transportation, and no engineers in particular, we're only thinking of alleviating congestion, the safety of drivers, or the most efficient movement of goods. These things are excellent, they're worthy of support, but we hope you agree that there is more to that equation. We also need to clarify and clearly understand that our goals for the I-30 corridor include being the current USDOT designated high-speed rail corridor between Dallas and Little Rock. Should I do one more slide? I'm going to show you real quick here, guys. Okay, that's it. The point of this is that we are the current, if you look at the federal maps, we are the current high-speed rail corridor. When I say high-speed rail, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, that's not the one that's down on the ground, hits cows, and runs in pickup trucks. That's the one that's up in the air that is not interrupted. It's what we see a lot of in Europe, and it's what we see that we have kind of fallen behind on here in this country where we used to be innovators, okay? So high-speed rail, being that corridor and understanding that, has a price, and it's vigilance. Just having the designation doesn't guarantee the outcome. Reference the Dallas Area Rapid Transit and Northeast Texas Regional Mobility Authority signing ceremony recently held, press release, theirs calls for higher speed rail. This is the same tracks, just going a little faster on it. And that's not what we're about. This one comes along the I-20 corridor, and it's aimed at connecting Shreveport. And that's what you see on this slide here. I believe the thing that we have to understand is for us to keep that corridor designation, our voice must be heard. And TEX-21 is an excellent vehicle for that. The key is unity of purpose all along this I-30 corridor. Our vigilance can't waver, or our designation may be forfeit in all likelihood, because you understand, if somebody else gets there first, it's real easy for elected officials to want to take credit for it and say, yeah, that's the new one. We don't want that. Don't get me wrong, from a regional standpoint, from that view from 30,000 feet, we want Tyler, Longview, Shreveport to all prosper as well, just not at our expense. I-30 corridor task force will be something that each city and county along I-30 could and should greatly benefit from. Reference this article that was on the slide. Okay? It's no less important to counties like Titus or Bowie than it is to Dallas or Tarrant. For Titus County, joining this initiative would link you with a vast network of cities, counties, and transportation experts. TEX-21's I-30 corridor task force is focused on a linear way of thinking that has resonated with many people along the I-30 corridor. As representatives of Bowie County and the Twin Cities of Texarkana, Arkansas, and Texas, members of TEX-21, it is our desire to partner with you in this initiative and see this thing continue forward and grow. TEX-21 is the best vehicle for partnering since it has already achieved success by bringing together like-minded individuals who understand the economic windfall that will result in improved transportation and infrastructure throughout our region. You know, when we're coming back, and Brian, I don't know if you saw this the other day, Judge. Excuse me. I knew it was Brian before I knew it was Judge. We were coming back from Little Rock and about Gurdon. We noticed there were no cars on the interstate coming our way. And we noticed a big accident there. Go several miles further, and you ran into this. This is what happens to commerce when we don't have frontage roads and feeder roads. We'd like to see this get addressed up and down the I-30 corridor so we continue to prosper. And thank you for allowing me to share these thoughts with you this morning. David, do you have something you'd like to add?
Bob, thank you for that excellent presentation. May it please the court, my name is David Dean. I'm counsel for the TEX-21 group, not-for-profit created about 10 years ago. We'd love to have Titus County become an active participating member with the group. The I-30 Corridor Coalition, which is a subset of TEX-21, we think would be of particular interest to you gentlemen as you continue to kind of not only celebrate what you have, but to look ahead to see what's happening in
and separate the throughput that makes a difference as well. So we thought, gosh, that this would reason validation enough for the creation of this corridor coalition, because this kind of massive congestion occurs on Bluebird Day, you know, no ice or anything, what have you. The dues are $4,250 a year for a county the size of Titus County. They're set by bylaws. So gentlemen such as yourself that sit on the executive committee of Text 21 own the corporation. You become an owner, you join it, and annually those dues are set and considered. It's based on 2,000 population. The executive committee said, well, we don't want to penalize our members just because the population is risen. It might push them into a different category. For that, you get one voting member at two offices that could serve with $10 meetings. We meet quarterly in Austin with the head of TxDOT on the daily signs. Of course, he's retiring in August. But for the last 8 years, we've been quarterly in Austin with the district engineer of TxDOT and his top management team. It includes access to and participation with the legislative caucus, which Bob said consists of over 100 members of the Texas House and Texas Senate, and rolled into Arkansas with a real focus up on 30 and 40, and also our congressional caucus, which has 100% participation of the Texas congressional delegation. As you know, we picked up four new congressional districts in this last census, and we'll be very active in encouraging whomever wins those seats to become affiliated with this as well. So it's a chance to work together with not only cities and counties in a particular region, but really from throughout the state of Texas, but also state and federal officials who are kind of like-minded. To be perfectly honest, D.C. is in turmoil on transportation policy. They just have a mantra, we want to do more with less, no new taxes, no new fees, no new money, but yet the population is continuing to grow. That's kind of the same way the legislature is right now as it relates to transportation
questions, anyone?
Judge, I just think it's a good idea to be involved in this, infrastructure's everything. Look at Titus County, the city of Mount Pleasant, that has been worked on, and then, the, loop projects that we have here. And, I think for us to be a part of this is vital for the future growth of this area.
Well, we're not gonna get anything done on our own. Our community believes in cooperation. We've cooperated on other, industrial and economic development projects, and we know that's the key to our survival, and that's why I am very interested in this, and I would like to tag along with the big boys and become a member. I guess your consideration now is, you got several different things to consider. We've been offered a half year's membership, that'll take us through the end of our fiscal year at $2,125. We can consider joining at the beginning of our next fiscal year, or we can choose to just be non-contributing bystanders while this project continues.
My wishes are that we see how our budget preparations go, and I would agree that I would like to be a part of their effort, but I'd also like to just see how the money's going to shake out this year, and make an effort to get it into this next year's budget.
Okay. Appreciate it, David. We're going to move on then to item number 7 then, and that is to consider and possibly approve membership in the Tex 21 Interstate 30 Corridor Task Force. You've heard from Commissioner Boggs. I'm looking for a motion, if there is one.
Judge, I'm going to make a motion. We go ahead and join us for this half year.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Hockaday that we go ahead and take advantage of an immediate membership with Tex 21 with a cost of $2,125. And I'm going to second that motion. All those in favor of joining this partial year at $2,125, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No. All right, Commissioner Boggs, no. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate you, ladies and gentlemen, coming up. And I'll get with you afterwards. If you all need to get on, you know, you understand we've got, we're gonna break away from here about 10 o'clock, and I know you've got a 10:30 meeting. So go on whenever you see fit, and we'll hook back up later, okay?
Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Item number 8, presentation by Carol Gresham with shelter agencies. Safety.
Being able to be here today. I'm Carol Gresham, the Executive Director of Safety, and I've provided you with handouts and pamphlets. Basically, I'm here today to ask for consideration in your budget for next year. I have kind of listed what a summary of our services. I know you know that we've been here since 1995, provide shelter and a lot of different services, but lately, in the last couple of years, we've been providing housing assistance from HUD grants, which is huge. Our budget right now is $1.2 million, so we're a pretty big asset to this community. We spend probably about $800,000 of the money here in this community, and so it generates jobs and encourages the women that are in the programs to get an education and to get off welfare and food stamps and all that kind of stuff and be productive members of our community. So we do a lot of things, just not the shelter that we did 15 years ago. The other thing that we do, which might be interesting to you, that's not really just listed here, is we do groups for men, women, and children, teens, anger management. The county attorney and CPS refers a lot of these people, and these are people that are have been in the court system or misdemeanors, that type of thing. And by taking the 10-week course, a lot of them have said that that really has helped them with anger, and they're not going to be involved in that again. So that helps our community as far as law enforcement arresting them and all that kind of stuff. I've listed the counties that are supporting safety. The ones at the bottom part, Hopkins, Lamar, and Red River, those counties are giving safety a lot of money. They are self-sustaining. We have offices in all of three of those counties, and they're paying for themselves. So the money that we raise here is not going to those counties. We do help a lot of people in those counties, though. The other counties, Camp Franklin, Morris, and Titus, Camp Franklin and Morris raise money, and we spend it here, which I think is a little bit unfair. I think that Titus County needs to support safety in some manner. It doesn't have to be a lot of money, but when I go before these other commissioners and United Ways and all of these other people to raise money for services here, they ask me, how much is your county giving you? And I kind of try to get away from that answer because it's a little bit embarrassing. So I'm hoping that you'll see what we do for this area. It's not just the shelter. It's a lot more than the shelter. And maybe consider us in your budget for next year. Anyone have any questions? This is really short and sweet. We have really grown a lot. And the other thing I didn't mention is the prevention activities. We realize now that domestic violence and sexual assault are just not going to go away on its own. And the CDC, Center for Disease Control, has a curriculum which we've changed it a little bit and submitted to the Attorney General's office. They've approved it, and this is the curriculum that we're using here in Titus County for prevention activities.
Fortunately, most of us in this room don't get much exposure to safety, and it's one of these things out of sight, out of mind, and that's no excuse, but this is an amazing entity here that does work that, again, most of us don't know anything about, but it's tough work. It's important work, and they provide an amazing service for women and their families in our community. Appreciate what you've done over the years as well, too.
Thank you.
We will talk about this during our upcoming budget, and hopefully you'll be back and kind of ring your bell again one more time when we begin that process.
I'd like to provide any other information that you need audits or anything.
Thank you. All right, item number 9, consider and possibly approve bids for our control panel for the jail we spoke about a month ago. And as I understand, Captain Fosdick and Sheriff, you've had a chance to review those bids and have a recommendation for us?
Yes, we do. The two highest bids, Sedaptic and East Rowans, they have nothing to offer over what the other two lower bids had, so we automatically ruled them out. The two lowest ones were CCC Group and MCS. Now, when you first look at it, it appears that CCC had the lowest bid at $161,700. But when you factor in all the stuff that we're going to need, which one of the biggest things I looked for, and I learned this by experience with the camera system we dealt with years ago at the city, is the service bid that's on it, because you're dealing with software a lot more than anything on these new systems because they're all computerized. CCC is not the lowest. They were asking for over $20,000 a year service agreement. So so that kind of, if you look at it on the long haul, the 3-year period or actually a 5-year period, they're actually not cheaper. And CCC, we found out all the people we called, they're using the software and equipment that MCS sells. So we went straight to MCS, and their bid was just a little bit higher.
What was that bid?
The CCC Group was $161,700.
$212
on the MCS? And then MCS was $212, yes, sir.
And their annual maintenance was?
Well, they've offered us a maintenance agreement at $1,350 a year, which is actually very good and shows that they believe in the product. The other group, CCC, was wanting to come down six times a year and charge $21,000 a year for a service agreement. So after 3 years, it wouldn't be cheaper at all. That there actually would be quite a bit higher, especially if you look at a 10 to 12 year period. The CCC group would be actually quite a bit. But some things we looked at too is if when the loop comes in or the bypass, whatever that we're going to call it, if it does spur growth, and then the way that they're turning people out of prisons, we're going to, it's not if, it's when, we're going to have to add on one day to a jail and develop the basement down there, which we're very fortunate to do that because we can spend $1.5 million to develop that one day to meet our needs compared to having to spend $15 to $18 million on a new jail. This system, the most expensive part will already be purchased. It's just simply a matter of buying another tower and a control panel or a board and just putting it in. So it's the adaptability on it is ready to go. When we do have to add on one day, and that may be 10, 20 years down the road, but whenever we do. Another thing with this system that we like is even when the software gets outdated, instead of having to buy a whole new system, you can just upgrade the software to it one day whenever that time comes. So, but our recommendation is going to be the MCS. And we've added in, they've even agreed to go with a 5-year contract on the service agreement, which would make a total of $219,490.
There's a big difference there in your service contract. Are you getting the service with MCS that you're getting with CCC?
Yes, sir. It's just that CCC Group, what they're going to do is they're going to come in and buy the equipment from MCS. It's what they're going to do, and that's why they're trying to make their money up on the service agreement, which MCS actually is the group selling it. We went down to Bell. We drove down to Bell County to actually look, and they have quite a system there. It's probably triple the size of ours. They've been going for about 2 years, and they love it. And then I think we called, what, nine other counties, and we found no complaints. But wherever we called to try to find out about CCC Group, they said the same thing. They said, well, everything they buy from MCS, they just stick it to you on the service agreement. So I think it would better just go straight to the company that's selling it, and in the long run, it's going to be cheaper anyway because they're not going to charge you such a high service agreement.
Okay, questions, anybody?
Carl, we've known this was coming for some time. What did you kind of figure for the cost of this security system?
I don't remember what we figured the cost was. It was about $200,000 or something.
We figured it over $200,000.
So it's within the guidelines we were kind of looking at.
I make the motion that we purchase the MCS detention system as recommended by.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Boggs that we go with MCS, second by Commissioner Fields. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, and it's unanimous. All right.
Well, the other thing, we had Cabro with us when we talked to them. They're going to give them a disc. They're going to be able to work on it, and they're going to cooperate with them 100%. So that's going to help us a lot, even on service agreements. And he's talked to them directly. They're going to install Windows 7.
Yes, we made sure that it was compatible for the future, and that way that it would make things easier if we had to replace any kind of hardware down the road, which we can do internally and save us quite a bit of money.
Okay. Good deal. All right. Thank you. All right, item number 10, we're going to revisit the last meeting. We approved a maintenance bid from Roberts Refrigeration, and I failed to make a distinction between a 1 or a 3-year term there. They will keep the price the same for 3 years if we choose to award them the full 3 years. Otherwise, it'll just be a year-to-year contract. So I'd like to just clarify what we would like to do with Roberts providing our maintenance.
Well, they've been our maintenance provider for some time, and they have won the bid to install the HVA, or I say that, with that will be awarded, but they had the lowest bid for the installation of the new upgrade. So I move that we approve a 3-year term.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Boggs that we go with a 3-year commitment to and from Roberts Refrigeration. have a second? I'll make a second. All those in favor of a three-year maintenance award for Roberts rather than the unspecified or the 1 year that we perhaps assumed at last meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And it's unanimous. Thank you very much. All right, and then right along with Roberts Refrigeration on item number 11, we tabled our project bid from for the HVAC upgrade, and Roberts Refrigeration, like Commissioner Boggs mentioned, was the low bidder. We did get a written confirmation from Walt Johnson, who's been our consultant on this project, and he said everything checked out, and that appeared to him to be the best deal for sure. So we can go ahead, if you like, and make a decision on the award of that HVAC upgrade bid.
How much was it, Judge? How much was the price? How much was the bid price?
It had several different components, and I don't have those figures there in front of me. But there was
Carol's looking at it right now.
One, two, three, four. They priced it individually by, Wood had priced it in about three different components, whereas Roberts priced it on a unit by unit basis, and so the total was $87,000 plus crane rental for a total of $89,500.
Keep in mind that $80,000 of that is stimulus money, as part of the grant.
If all systems are purchased from them, again, because they bid them individually, lower the crane rental to $1,700. We have alternate units that could be selected to save us a total of $9,000. But again, there's a $1,700 crane rental rather than the $2,500 if we award the entire project to Roberts. And again, our consultant, engineer Walt Johnson, did say that yes, this was acceptable. Bid. All right. So I'll go ahead and I will make a motion that we award the HVAC upgrade to Roberts Refrigeration. I have a second by Commissioner Boggs. All those in favor of this say aye.
Aye.
And it's unanimous. Thank you. Item number 12, consider and possibly approve a copier for JP123's office.
134.
I'm sorry, 134. I'm not reading very well. Would you like to discuss anything about that? Anything we need to know on that? I'm talking. What, Justin, if anything, does this have to do with you?
I just was checking out and making sure that it worked with NetData. That's the only thing that concerned with me. We checked with NetData and made sure that everything was appropriate for the network, and everything's completely compatible.
It's not a standalone copier. It's integrated with our...
It can be, and we will integrate it with everything else. Okay. Anytime, most of those standalone, what we assume would be a standalone copier, they're tied to the network with an IP address so that we can network print, so everyone in the office there can print to it. That's really what the only thing that concerns me.
So it's a copier and printer?
Yes, it's a copy printer, and I believe there's some email and fax functions with it as well.
Okay.
But just the main thing is the compatibility and the long-term compatibility. It's all going to work out very well. So.
Good. Thanks for checking that out.
Yes, sir.
And we sent this through the IT committee. Chris, she's out today, but they had all approved it on
Saturday. So they recommend this purchase.
Yes.
I'll make
that
motion.
Where are we paying it?
Out of my technology.
Out of technology.
Okay. Make that clear. Be paid for out of the technology fund. We have a motion by Commissioner Boggs, second by Commissioner Hinton. All those in favor of approval of this purchase, say aye.
Aye.
And it's unanimous.
Do y'all have that amount?
Pardon me?
Do we have the amount?
I think it's about $5,700.
Judge, before we go to the next item, I want to thank Judge McNutt. Consulting with the IT committee on this. I think this is the procedure that we need to go through on all technology purchases, even though it's completely within her
restate that. We've kind of put another layer in here by forming this IT committee, and again, even though in some cases we have a department head has the complete right and authority to move forward with a purchase, we've asked them to run this by the technology committee, again, not for approval, but just to keep a group of people educated and informed as far as what items we're adding to our IT inventory. All right, item number 13, consider and possibly approve the purchase of a Marks and Brands software program from eDoc Tech for our clerk's office. Diane, would you like to tell us about that?
Okay, well, every 10 years, everybody that has a brand in Titus County has to renew their Marks and Brands. So we're going to be flooded probably the first of September. Well, truly, the last day of August is the first day they can refile. And so anybody in the state, really, that has either Marks or Brands on their cattle or horses, they will have to renew them. If they don't renew them by February the 28th, I'm thinking, then that brand that they have on their cows or horses, someone else can come in and take their brand away. They have that long to refile with them.
What is it going to cost to do this?
It's $21, I think. I think it's $21 for a brand. And anyway, this software will make it so much easier because we don't really have anything right now but a book. And they draw the brand out in the book. And we don't have anything in the computer. Now, we did go in and scan the books, and we do have those in there right now. But this software would just make it much easier because when somebody comes in, we'll be able to search in different ways. I've gave y'all a printout that it can go alpha, numeric, or symbols. You know, they can just give us different ways to search. And also, when they come in to pay for these, this software will do collections also on them. So it'll just make it a whole lot easier. I've got them posted in there. I went and took the old books, and everybody that's active right now, we've got them posted on a poster board in there. That way, if somebody comes in and says, I want that brand, well, it's much easier for them to go and look at that cork board that I've got up, because looking through them old books and having to go back through it would take them too long for them to do that. Anyway, we did that, so that's going to help also. There's probably 200 maybe, I would think, that's active right now. But we've had people come in and try to renew now, and we tell them, you know, that they need to wait till after the last day of, I think is it the 28th, the 29th of August, I think they can, or really just September 1st. If they do it now, they would have to refile again. And the last day of August or the first day of September.
Does David not have this software?
All they have is something that you scan in there. It doesn't have what this has. This right here just does it all.
And that dip is?
It's $4,500. And they were asking for $750 on a yearly maintenance, you know, to do updates on our software and all that. But I kind of jewed them down to $500 a year. So that'll save me $250 a year.
How much a year?
It's $500 a year. They did have $750, but I told them I thought that was a little high, so they went down to
$500.
Out of the R&M.
They know
that has nothing to do with whether or not we use this software.
This money that we charge the farmers, where does that money go?
Part of it, I should have did the research on that. Most of it, Well, another, it goes to the Texas Cattlemen Association. They get quite a bit of that, I think, to keep their records up. But also this software, like in law enforcement, if they have, I can do them a printout from this, and if they found a cow out on the oil road or something, they'll be able to look at that printout and know whose it was, because this software has the phone number on it, the address, the owner, and anyway, it'll help law enforcement also locate, you know, find the owner of strays.
Okay.
I'm going to pay it out of my R&M, you know, records management.
Out of your
records management.
All right. Anyone care to make a motion on this item?
Make a motion to buy that program out of
EDOC out of Waco. Yeah,
I got a motion by Commissioner Fields that we purchased the Marks and Brand software from EDOC Tech at a price of approximately $4,500.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Hinton. All those in favor of this purchase, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye, and it's unanimous. All right, it's a couple of minutes after 10 o'clock. We're going to recess here for a brief presentation on first floor. And I think it'll be well worth it if y'all will join me down there. It won't take long. And Charlie, we'll have you first up when we rejoin in here. But yeah, let's make a motion to recess. I'll make that motion.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Hockaday. And we'll probably be 10 minutes or so.
Hey, Diane. They're doing all these bits. Are they getting you a copy? Like, because you need a copy.
Yes, so
you can scan it in or whatever.
Exactly.
You've got to be able to have for every one of these, whether it's this.
And that's what me and April have talked about. She's going to talk to Bob Boss and get a copy.
Don't tell Bob that. Judge Boss ought to have one.
My boss is Bob's cousin.
He might give you a copy tonight.
They only give